This is an ABC podcast.
This is the South Australian Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello, Isabella Pittaway with you for the Country Hour this Friday. We're going to be talking weather soon, so 0467 922 783 if you've had some rain. Also in the next half hour, protesters closely tracking an effigy of Federal Water Minister David Littleproud as it floats down the Murray River, wanted to make it to South Australia.
It's so important that we get him to the mouth of the Murray and just see how long it takes him to get there and how much water will go out the mouth of the Murray in the time it takes him to get there. That's the message we're trying to get through to the politicians.
And despite being appointed the nation's special drought envoy more than a year ago, it's emerged that Barnaby Joyce hasn't prepared a single report on the drought. What do you make of that? 0467 922 783. We'll be discussing that after the weather. But let's start with the weather today. And the rain has come on parts of Eyre Peninsula, with some farmers saying it could potentially save their season. I'd love to know your totals. You can send me a text on 0467 922 783. Some tallies include 25 millimetres around Minipa, 30 mils around Tumby Bay, and even some reports of 45 plus around the Yallander Flat and Cummins area. Lisa Boot farms with her family east of Lock and says the rain started at about 9:30 last night and it hasn't stopped since. She's speaking here with Brooke Neindorf.
Well, it's just started overflowing in the rain gauge, so I'd guess around sort of 27, 28 mils. It's our biggest fall for the year. It's amazing.
Did you ever think that it would eventually come?
No, to be honest. We weren't believing the forecast. We're like, nah, they've done it before and we're not going to get anything out of it. We might get a mil or two. And yeah, just actually in a little bit of shock that we've actually got this much rain.
Considering the weather that was seen yesterday as well.
Oh, it was horrible. We had a dust storm up here yesterday and couldn't hang the clothes out on the line for that. And today I can't hang the clothes out on the line for the rain. So can't win either way.
Now, your parents are over at Sheringa Way as well. What sort of rain tallies have they had?
Around 7:30 this morning, they had about 7 mils in the gauge. So nowhere near what we're getting. I think it seems to be fairly north, which is nice for a change.
So what does that essentially mean for your season now?
I reckon this will get us through summer. I mean, most of the sheep feed is still green. So although it was starting to shrivel up and look a bit sad with a few hot days recently, but I reckon this will just pump it up and get it going. And the fella that crops on our place, he's still got plenty of grain stuff, so it'll fill the heads out nicely. And I think everyone might be smiling a little bit after this if they haven't been hit by the frost. So
I have heard that frost has been quite bad up the Lockway this year, so you've seen it as well?
Yeah, we're pretty lucky there's not too much damage on our place. It's kind of hard to tell if the white heads are from lack of water and stress or if it's been frost, but it's surprisingly, yeah, we've been really lucky these past couple of years when everybody else has been getting hit all around us. We've managed to miss it somehow. It's been nice.
What does a rain like this mean for the region? Obviously, there has been areas that still have missed out, and it's the areas that really do need it that have missed it. But what does a rain like this do for people's moods around the region?
Oh, I was just in dropping my daughter at care this morning, and everyone was smiling, and yeah, you could just feel the shift instantly. Like I said, oh, geez, it's pretty wet, and everyone's like, I don't care, I'm not even going to do any work today, really. I can't get out. It's too wet. I was only driving at 50 k's on the dirt road here. It was too wet to drive any faster. I had it in four-wheel drive to get into town. Everyone's smiling and happy, and it's brilliant, yeah.
And what do the kids think?
They wanted to come outside. My daughter came out and stood outside and wanted to see the rain, and she's watching it. We haven't really seen much of it this year. And when we have not been consistent like this is what we needed back in June, July, but yeah, didn't get it then.
You can definitely hear the relief there. That's Lock farmer Lisa Boots speaking there with Brooke Neindorf. Well, while it is great to hear all these rain tallies, unfortunately reports are coming through as well that the areas that are needing it the most, so places like Cowal, Cleve and Kimber, just to name a few, they've still missed out on any big rains. And we do hope everything is going okay, particularly after yesterday's weather with those really windy and dusty conditions. And do remember that if you need to talk to someone, there is Lifeline on 13 11 14. And as we heard yesterday, Brooke Neindorf was at the Minipa Ag Centre's annual field day. And while she was there, she caught up with a few farmers to see how the season has been faring, particularly with that recent hot and windy weather.
Miles Tomney from Kunjina.
Well, Miles, how's it looking at your place this year?
Very fortunate at the moment. Things are hanging on. Yeah, picked up a little bit of rain through the season and as good as what we expect at the moment.
What about compared to this time last year?
Where I am, it's a lot better. Yeah, I had a very variable crop last year from some alright stuff, some very ordinary stuff. So, yeah, an improvement for me.
What does a day like today with this wind and a bit of warmer weather do to things?
Some things that might finish them and, yeah, we'll find out by the end of tonight. Hopefully a bit of rain, which is forecasted for us, it might save a little bit of country. But it's hanging on quite surprisingly well.
Yeah, Jason Brace from Poochera.
Well, Jason, how are things looking for 2019?
Oh, not too bad, I suppose, considering the year. We've only had 150 mils for the year, so I think we're going to have to get the header out. So could be better, but we'll escape with something, I guess.
Are you looking at cutting for hay or just getting it off for grain?
No, we'll put the header into it and try and get some grain. I think things have been going backwards the last 2 weeks, but we'll reap something, so get a bit more than seed, for sure, I think.
Compared to this time last year, how are things looking?
Probably poorer, because we had that great August last year, so things are looking pretty good this time of the year, but saying that, we're probably a month earlier this year, because we got a better start, so probably slightly behind, I guess, but yeah, not too bad.
This weather today, does that mean much to the crops? Has it dried out a bit?
Yeah, today and a couple of days last week haven't helped. If we could have kept a bit cooler temperatures and not as much wind, it would have been a lot better, but yeah, today is going to suck a fair bit of moisture out, so what's left, because there's not a lot of subsoil moisture as it is, so yeah, it's not beneficial by any means. Well, we missed our thunderstorm sort of weather over summer, which, you know, traditionally we get an inch or two, which sort of helps this time of year, but sort of missing that, and then probably the last 6 weeks have been pretty dry, so there was a lot of potential early, so that probably hasn't helped having the potential, so sort of, yeah, going back at a rate of knots, and we won't want too many more days like this, but saying that, if we can strike 5 to 10 mils, that could really help with a bit of grain fuel, so hopefully we can get that.
Joel Fitzgerald, we've got a farm at Pankawillany, about 40 k's west of Kimber.
How are things looking at your place, Joel?
Not the best. I think the rainfall so far has been the lowest on record, so it's interesting times. But yeah, you just take what you can get, I suppose.
Compared to this time last year, you said it's one of the worst you've seen, but is it much worse than last year?
Oh, I think so, yeah. The way that it's died off, I suppose, it's, definitely haven't seen it before. But, there's always an upside to things, so, yeah.
What's some of the upsides?
Oh, probably still got sheep, so you can offset a few things in that regard. Yeah, I guess you look at what you do have and not what you could potentially have. So, yeah, it's...
A lot of people have got that attitude, particularly in these tougher years. What do you think it is about EP farmers that do have that attitude about the season?
Oh, I guess generally most people around this place are all optimistic. We've got a good support base and everyone sort of knows everyone, so you can talk to one another, and most people are in the same boat around where we are. So, yeah, it's just being able to talk amongst each other and get through those times, I suppose.
Have you looked at cutting for hay or anything like that?
Oh, not really, because we haven't really got the bulk there anyway. So we did have one paddock of hay in, but it'll be enough to get us through for our own sheep. But yeah, haven't really looked to cut for weight hay or anything like that now.
That's Brian Smith, farmer at Nundrew, speaking with Brooke Neindorf. And I am asking you today if you've had any rain in your gauge or really what it's looking like out your way. 0467 922 783. If you'd like to send me a text, that's what Peter at Boolaroo has done. He says, Isabella, there's only dust and a dead dehydrated blowfly in my gauge. Yeah, it is unfortunate that those places that really do need it, some of them have missed out. But you can let me know how it's going at your place, 0467 922 783. It's also been pretty tough in the Riverland and Mallee, although the temperatures didn't quite reach the 35 degree peak they were originally forecast to. The wind caused some issues for Mallee growers. The Bureau of Meteorology recorded wind speeds of up to 45 to 50 kilometres an hour around Lamoureux. Mallee Sustainable Farming's Tanya Morgan told Grace Whiteside wind erosion is a concern.
It hasn't been an easy season for crops this year, and unfortunately it's the second year in a row that we're having these tough times. And, you know, on days that are really windy and challenge our crops at the best of times, you know, we still see that high risk of wind erosion when the bulk just isn't there from a poor growing season.
The weather recently has been very up and down. We've had some very warm days, but then frosts overnight and in the mornings. What does that mean for the crop and for harvest?
Frost is damaging more so around flowering, but sometimes we tend to see frost prior to flowering that can damage the stem, and the crops can fail to push ahead up because the stem's been damaged. When we see drought years, dry seasons, we tend to see the symptoms of frost exacerbated. So crops can sort of tolerate colder conditions when there's moisture. So we expect to see more frost damage from lighter frost events when crops are under drought stress too, which is sort of a double whammy.
There has been a lot of talk recently about farmers waiting for the grain yield or whether to bale early for hay. How is heat impacting that decision, particularly for farmers in the Mallee?
Yeah, it's a really tough decision to make, and you wish you had a crystal ball at this point in time, because if you get follow-up rainfall, it can help to fill grains. So even if you have had some frost damage, a good rainfall in spring can help to fill the grains that are left there. Hot days that we tend to see in spring, they're no good, especially when crops are under drought stress. They'll pinch grains off, grains will be aborted, all that sort of thing starts to happen. But it's hard to know, especially this year with some of the forecasting that's been happening. Rain's fallen unforecasted. Sometimes the days have been hotter than what we expected. So it's just so hard to know. And there's so many variables when it comes to frost too.
And where we are at the moment with the growth of the crops, does wind have much of an effect on them?
Oh, definitely. When crops are out in head and flowering, that's when they're most vulnerable for setting their yield. So when we tend to see those stressful conditions, that's when yield can really be affected. So, but having said that, if we can get some grains to fill and we do get some good follow-up rainfall, then there is still a chance that farmers will be able to get something back.
Tanya Morgan from Mallee Sustainable Farming. Fodder supply store owner Shane Nettle says despite more growers considering cutting early, there won't be an oversupply of hay.
In the Riverland of Murray Mallee, things are obviously a little bit grim, to say the least. A lot of crops will probably be cut early, I'd say, if they can reach maturity at all, or if there's enough bulk for that to happen. But unfortunately, last month and a half have been horrible, and the potential is just dying every day. Hopefully we might get a little bit of less wind and a little bit more moisture tomorrow just to refresh things a fraction. So yes, that's where we're at.
And having these sort of weather conditions, the strong winds and the high temperatures, what does that mean for harvest generally, that people will cut early?
I'm not sure where people are headed. Like, obviously, the stress on the plant, where the grain will, obviously there'll be a lot of pinch grain around. Yeah, so it's really a tough decision to make whether they leave it or try and reach something now. But it's really depends on, I suppose, on the situation, whether the paddocks are set up for hay or whether, you know, there are contractors available, or just whether, you know, cutting hay will pay. So, yeah, it's a really, really tough position to be in.
And with quite a few, from what I've heard, quite a few growers contemplating cutting for hay, is that going to result in an oversupply in the hay market?
I wouldn't say so. I think it's a pretty cruel season this year. Some people are in a pretty solid position, even though they've had below average rainfall. But I think there are portions of Australia that would, you know, definitely need the stock feed. But it's really a matter of whether people, you know, they've got no choice but to reduce their numbers. And obviously this may have an effect on the price and availability of good quality hay. But, yeah, a lot of variability of supply. It might, well, last year it just disappeared out of the state. Next year I just don't know where feedlots and animal numbers are at, and whether export prices will drive the demand again for hay.
That is Shane Nettle, owner of Cobdogla Fodder in the Riverland, and he was speaking there to Grace Whiteside. Well, on the text line, and whether you've had any rainfall, Stuart here says 24 mils here at Ruddle. I'm sorry if I've got that wrong. He says that's so far today and still raining, a saviour for the crops that are left. Great to hear that you've got some rain, Stuart, but as I've said many times, not everyone as lucky. Steve at Tarawri saying nothing here yet, high clouds, only dust and blowies. Thanks for the update, Steve. 0467 922 783, if you want to let me know if you've had any rain or what it's looking like out your way. A bit later in the program as well, we're also going to be talking about the fact that despite being the nation's special drought envoy for more than a year, Barnaby Joyce hasn't prepared a single report on the drought. So really wanting to get your views on that and what you make of that. A year in the job and not a single report on the drought. A text here from Anonymous saying that it's obvious that Barnaby Joyce isn't much use to rural businesses in Australia in his role as drought envoy and in regards to his statements on live sheep exports. You can have your say too. 0467 922 783.
You're listening to the South Australian Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Where it is 22 past 12, my name's Isabella Pittaway. Well, the small town of Pooncarry in the New South Wales Murray region could run out of its raw water supply within a week. Leonie Thorne was at a water meeting when this issue was raised. Leonie, what exactly is the situation in Pooncarry and just how much water does the town have left?
So in a good year, all of Pooncarry's water would come from the Darling River, but since last November, the town's potable water has been coming from an emergency bore because the quality of the Weir Pool water had become so poor and just so saline that it couldn't be used for drinking or bathing anymore. However, that weir was still used for the town's raw water supply. Raw water is used for things like gardening, firefighting, and the toilets. However, this supply is now expected to run out, and as the New South Wales Environment Department Director of Inland Water Planning, Peter Hyde, told us yesterday, it could be pretty soon.
Usually Pooncarry gets its water from the straight from the river, from the Lower Darling, but unfortunately due to the dry conditions, it appears that you're going to run out of water sometime in the next 2 or 3 days.
So that was Peter Hyde from the New South Wales Water and Environment Department. So Pooncarry does look like it will run out of its raw water supply within a week.
What's being done about this? I mean, what are people doing to prepare, or what is being done for the community to prepare?
So the Wentworth Shire Council will be carting water to the town from today, actually, and the council says it's in the process of looking to install extra bores to help provide an alternative raw water supply, and the council will be carting water there until those new bores and a delivery pipeline are installed. Not quite sure what the timeline is on that. And again, the potable supply, which is used for drinking and bathing, is not under threat. So the town is still using that for essential needs.
What are people in the town saying? Like, what's the current mood?
This isn't the first time the town has run out of its raw water supplies, but there is some concern about water security. There have also been mixed reports about the quality of the potable water, which again is coming from that emergency bore and being treated. Some residents have reported children with eczema having that exacerbated by the quality of the water, and others have reported that it doesn't taste so good. But again, those reports are mixed. Here's what the publican at the Pooncarry Hotel, Josh Sheed, told ABC Breakfast this morning.
We've lived here 6 or 7 years, and this is the second time we've seen it in that short time. It's not an ideal situation we're in, but the town's still here and people need to come out and say good day and support us and have a look for themselves.
So the potable water or the stuff people use domestically, that comes from the bore. What's the quality of that water like?
Oh, there's mixed reports. Personally, I think it's quite good. You can drink it and for showering and things like that. There's not any great issues with it. A few of the children have, you know, problems with eczema and things like that, but it's not serious at this stage.
That was Pooncarry resident Josh Sheed, who's the publican at the local hotel.
And, I mean, we are heading into summer, so, you know, not expecting a lot more rainfall, really. So what's going to happen next for Pooncarry?
So several citrus growers in the region are in the process of harvesting, and some will be discontinuing plantations once the harvest is done due to the lack of water. A lot of people are just hoping for more rain. And the council has said, again, the potable water supply is not under threat. Some stations have been getting water trucked in for up to 8 months, particularly those with children, due to the bore water or river water causing rashes and skin issues. So as for what happens next, I guess the council will be carting in that water to the town and looking at the process of installing new emergency bores.
That's reporter Leonie Thorne. More texts coming through in regards to Barnaby Joyce having not prepared a report on the drought, despite being in that role of drought envoy for more than a year. Joel agreeing with the Songlark, who texted in earlier, saying that it's obvious that Barnaby Joyce has been of no use. Joel saying here that Barnaby Joyce has shown in him being drought envoy that he's that's been pretty useless, all talk and no action. Thanks for your text, Joel. You can have your say, 0467922783. Jake has sent through an image here saying that the rake driver is earning their keep today as the hayrow's blown and no rain. Thanks for your text, Jake. And yeah, has the weather yesterday forced you to make a decision about cutting for hay? 0467922783. Well, let's stay in the Murray-Darling Basin because this is quite a peculiar one. Protesters are closely tracking an effigy of Federal Water Minister David Littleproud as it floats down the Murray River. The effigy was thrown off the bridge into the river at a protest against the Murray-Darling Basin plan earlier this month. But as Warwick Long reports, not everything is what it seems.
It all started at a rowdy and angry Basin Plan protest on September the 5th, where an effigy of Federal Water Minister David Littleproud that was stuffed in a toilet was grabbed by protesters and hurled from high on a bridge spanning the Newell Highway between New South Wales and Victoria down into the Murray River.
It's going in the river. The effigy of the Minister for Water, David Littleproud, being thrown into the Murray River as we speak.
Since then, the effigy has been floating on down the Murray. Pictures have appeared online of the minister's mannequin lying on the side of the river, hanging with fishermen and sitting on a houseboat. Protest organisers now want the effigy to make it to South Australia. One of them is Lindsay Schultz from Benjaroop in northern Victoria.
Yes, well, it was a mate of mine's idea, actually, to put a tracker in him and so we've put him in and he's been quietly going down the river and he's had a few hiccups. He's been snagged a few times and he's been with fishermen and today he's actually with someone on a houseboat just up from the Chica Bridge.
So you've kept an eye on him and you're making sure he's shepherded down the river.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't even know how to use a mobile phone probably, but my mate, his name's Robbie, but everyone calls him Dorcas because he's such a Dorcas, but he's the one that's the electronic nerd, and he's the one that's got it all working, and I just keep an update from him. But, yes, it's amazing how many people are looking out for him, and he's on a houseboat as we speak, you know.
One small thing I need to pick up on here, Lindsay, that I need the story on. I'm calling shenanigans on this mannequin, because when you threw him in the river, he didn't have any legs. Now, all of a sudden, your effigy has legs. What's going on there?
Well, the reason is because actually the one that went over the side, the real one was too good to be thrown over the side, and we thought it might have broken. So the actual one that went over the side never had the tracker in him, but the tracker went in that same day, and he's headed off from there. So, yes, you're right, he didn't have legs then. But, you know, these politicians, they can grow legs.
What's the message you're wanting to send by doing this? Because this has clearly become a thing. When you see it online, there's a lot of talk about it. There's constant text updates on where this effigy's at. What's the message here?
Well, the message is that we're trying to get through to people about how much water is actually going down this river and out into the lower lakes and then out into the sea that could be used for irrigation and growing food for our nation.
There are people that say, and we had these texts to the Country Hour when your protest was going on, that you're playing the man and not the issue here. What's your response to that?
He is the man. He is in charge, and a lot of people say that he's taken on things that somebody else has done, but he is the man right now. Now, do you know that David Littleproud will not talk to us? Full stop. But David Littleproud is the minister, water minister, federal water minister, so he is at the man to make the decisions.
ABC Rural contacted Minister David Littleproud, who has declined to comment. His National Party colleague, the member for Nicholls, Damien Drum, says the effigy is all part of being in political life and highlights problems with the Basin Plan.
Well, I think for myself it's part of it. It's just part of the rough and tumble. It's part of David. He would consider that part of the rough and tumble. Some people take offence. Ultimately, it is a sign of the pain. It's a sign of the damage. It's a sign of the suffering that these people are going through. So we get that.
So how far can the minister's effigy go? Lindsay Schultz.
There is a little sign on him, you know, that if you do find this, to ring me and let me know and put him back in the middle of the river and whatever. So, yes, so far so good. And the people that have got him on the houseboat at the moment, and I agreed with them, that if he's just ready to go down through the middle of Wichita and Moama now, I know that someone might want to grab him and take him and sit him up on the town clock or something, but it's so important that we get him to the mouth of the Murray and just see how long it takes him to get there and how much water will go out the mouth of the Murray in the time it takes him to get there. That's the message we're trying to get through to the politicians.
So in a couple of weeks, he's gone from Tokemoul to Echuca. You could be in this for the long haul.
Well, it's a long way. He's at the 1,714 marker, so he's still got 1,714 kilometres to go before he gets to the mouth of the Murray.
So there you go. Am I going to have to put you all on effigy watch and be getting updates on that? That is Basin Plan protest organiser Lindsay Schultz from Northern Victoria ending that report from Warwick Long. It is after 12:30 on the Country Hour. Let's find out what's making news headlines. It's good afternoon to Luke Radford.
Good afternoon, Isabella. Plans for a controversial port proposed for Kangaroo Island's northern coast has been redesigned after local opposition. Kangaroo Island Plantation Timbers wants to build the port at Smith Bay to export its products, but a nearby abalone farm is worried incoming ships will pollute the bay and is currently pest-free. The company has been proposed extending its jetty another 250 metres offshore and eliminate the need for dredging. But Anthony Hall from Yumba Aquaculture, who owns the abalone farm, is still not happy and says more work is needed to address mounting issues. The head of the Home Affairs Department, Mike Pizzullo, has suggested journalists intend to publish classified information should ask the government first to ensure that their reporting does not compromise national security. He's been giving evidence to a parliamentary inquiry into press freedom in the wake of raids on the ABC and the home of News Corp journalist Annika Smethurst. Mr. Pizzullo says he has dealt with about 24 journalists who sought advice before working on national security matters and was asked about his dealings with journalists working on sensitive stories. And the South Australian Southern Bluefin Tuna Association has welcomed this week's announcement. There'll be a Senate inquiry into the impacts of seismic testing. Seismic testing has been set to start in the Great Australian Bight this month to look for oil and gas, but that's been postponed until at least next year. The inquiry is set to start next year, with public submissions opening in the coming weeks. Researcher Kirsten Ruff says the industry association will make a submission outlining its concerns about the testing. And we'll have more ABC News at 1 o'clock.
Thanks, Luke. Let's head off to the Weather Bureau now and say hello to senior forecaster Tom Bowick. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Isabella.
Now, we've had, well, some people have been really, really fortunate in picking up some rain across parts of the Eyre Peninsula. We've heard some reports of 45 mils plus around the Yolanda Flat Cummins area.
Yes, I won't be disputing that. Certainly there's been some significant rainfalls over the Eyre Peninsula area, and some of them have really produced some records for September rainfall totals. So if we look at Woodna, they've had 31.8 millimetres up to 9 a.m. And they've had a further 10 millimetres since then. But that 31.8 millimetres in terms of a 24-hour total is a record for September rainfall for Woodna. That is a 21-year record. So there was a different station before, so it's only for this particular station. Similarly at Minipa, 29.4 millimetres up to 9 a.m. That's a September record as well. That's a 24-year station, and they've had a further 6 millimetres since 9 a.m. Kyan Cutters had 33 millimetres up to 9 a.m. The record there is longer. We have to go back to the 16th of September 1975, when they did have that September day, had 41.4 millimetres, and at Lock they've had 34 millimetres, and the record there is 35.2 millimetres on the 27th of September 1979. So, certainly very significant rainfalls through the Eyre Peninsula area. Now, what's happening with that rain area in the future? Well, it is moving eastwards, so we're starting to see some good rainfalls over the southern York Peninsula and Kangaroo Island, and moving further east into the remainder of the Eyre Peninsula there. There's been Cleves had 11 millimetres moving into that area, so it is still moving slowly eastwards. There's been 11 millimetres at Stenhouse Bay. So, look, the general idea with that rain band is that we will have areas of rain and possible thunderstorms over the agricultural area, or developing over the agricultural area, and also the south of the pastoral districts. That will be sort of slowly contracting eastwards during the day, and it'll be confined to the eastern districts in the late evening. For the remainder of the state, there will be a slight to medium chance of showers and possible thunderstorms, but the showers will be clearing away in the west, although they'll be persisting about the western coast, with some possible small hail coming into those western coasts later this evening, as some cold air sort of moves up from the west or southwest there. As far as the winds go, look, most of the state's got moderate fresh southwesterly winds now. But there is still some northeasterly, northeast to northwesterly winds over the sort of far north and northeastern parts of the state, where it's sort of still warm. The change moving through that area will produce some fresh, strong and gusty southwesterly winds during this evening. So there's still a chance of some raised dust around over the northern parts. And I think probably places like Coober-Pedy and Moomba are already starting to see a little bit of dust already now. Now, moving into Saturday, that rain band will still be with us just in the eastern districts in the early morning, with some possible thunderstorms. Following that, there'll still be a slight to medium chance of showers for the agricultural area, more likely if you're in the southern agricultural area. Some possible thunderstorm activity for the southeastern Kangaroo Island districts associated with that cold air, which is expected in the west on the Friday there, so that'll be moving eastwards, and even some possible small hail near southern and western coasts and in the southeast districts. Temperature, it's going to be pretty cool over the weekend, so cool to cold in the south for Saturday, grading to mild in the far north. Then on Sunday, we see another frontal system moving over southern parts during the day. That will see a slight to medium chance of showers for the agricultural area in the west coast district. It should be mainly for the southern agricultural area, and the showers will be increasing to a high to very high chance over the Mount Lofty ranges in the southeast districts associated with that front. So you'll see a peak of rainfall coming through those areas during the day on Sunday. Also some possible thunderstorms and small hail south of about Port Lincoln to Lamoureux. Again, front assisting that process there. On the Monday, things sort of easing back. Just a slight chance of showers about the southern agricultural area, increasing to a medium chance of the lower southeast district. And then as we move into Tuesday, the shower activity should be mostly sort of clearing away, just a chance about the southern coast and ranges, and increasing to a medium chance for the lower southeast, so not a great deal around there. The outlook for Wednesday to Friday of next week is for dry conditions apart from a slight chance of showers in the southeast districts and perhaps extending over the southern agricultural area on Friday. Now, I didn't mention sort of any frost patches, frost and fog patches on the way through, but there is a chance of some frost and fog over the sort of northern parts of the agricultural area and into the southern pastoral districts really over the next days into the next week as well. There probably the most likely days are going to be a sort of Tuesday morning for those frost areas, so keep an eye out for that as well. Now the rainfall totals from now until midnight Tuesday expecting to increase up to 2 to 15 millimetres for the northern agricultural area, further higher falls of 10 to 20 millimetres for the southern agricultural area. And with that sort of front-enhancing rainfall on Sunday over the Mount Lofty Ranges and the lower southeast, we could see falls again for the ranges, Mount Lofty Ranges south of Barossa Valley and the lower southeast district in the range of 20 to 35 millimetres. For the remainder of the state, 1 to 5 millimetres is expected, although it's going to be generally dry if you're in the northeast pastoral to the west of about Woomera and also in the far northeast of the northeast pastoral. So if you didn't quite catch all those rainfalls, they'll be on the state forecast on the Bureau website later today. So that's about it from me, Isabella. Back to you.
Thanks, Tom. It definitely seems like today was the best of it. That is Tom Bowick at the Weather Bureau. Let's look at the far west of New South Wales now, and the Upper Western District, a partly cloudy day tomorrow with possible raised dust in the afternoon, a slight chance of a shower, and overnight temperatures falling to between 11 and 21, with daytime temperatures reaching 22 to 31. For the Lower Western District, a partly cloudy day with a slight chance of a shower in the morning, the chance of a thunderstorm in the far east in the afternoon. Overnight temperatures will fall to between 9 and 18, and daytime temperatures will reach from 20 to 26.
On ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill, this is the South Australian Country Hour.
Where it is 18 minutes to one. Well, following questioning by Labor and others in federal parliament, it's emerged that Barnaby Joyce hasn't prepared a single report on the drought, and that's despite having been appointed the nation's special drought envoy more than a year ago. The revelation was confirmed when Drought Minister David Littleproud wrote to parliament to say the government would not be making any reports by the special drought envoy public because no such report exists. Kath Sullivan explains to Michael Condon that they can't release documents if they don't have them.
This week, Labor used the parliament to call on the government to provide the reports not only of Special Drought Envoy Barnaby Joyce, but also the Coordinator General for Drought, Major General Stephen Day. And the response, I suppose you could say, reads a little bit like an own goal from the government. It was forced to respond through the Parliament. It was actually raised in the Senate. The Nationals Deputy Leader Bridget McKenzie said it was a matter for David Littleproud to respond to as the Drought Minister, and he's provided this letter that's now been tabled. And if I just read the final paragraph of this letter, I think this is sort of quite telling. It says, "The request for the former Special Envoy for Drought Assistance and Recovery's report cannot be complied with as he did not prepare a final report, and as such, no document exists."
Which is along the lines of what Labor was hinting at, and the question is, well, what was he doing when he was envoy?
And I've got to say, Kondo, it's not just Labor that's been hinting at this for some time. Mr. Joyce was appointed special drought envoy in September of last year, I think it was, or late August, just as Prime Minister Scott Morrison became the Prime Minister. He was in that role until May of this year when we saw the appointment of David Littleproud as Drought Minister, or Minister for Drought Preparedness, might be the full title. So it's a fair whack of time. And when I asked Barnaby Joyce's office this week if he had prepared a report, if he'd in fact been asked to prepare a final report, I did get a response saying that he had reported directly to the Prime Minister on numerous occasions. The spokesperson for Mr. Joyce said, numerous particular concerns of farmers' interaction with government departments and charities had been raised. But there was no clarification around whether or not he was actually required to prepare a report. We do know that he didn't receive any extra payment for taking on the title of Special Drought Envoy. There seems to be some people who think that it was his job to meet with farmers, not necessarily to provide a written report to government. But there are a lot of people in drought-affected Australia who are waiting not only for it to rain, but to be able to make some sense of the support that is available and that is offered. And we know the National Farmers Federation, the Country Women's Association, for a long time now have been calling for some sort of national drought policy, not just a strategy, not just all the states saying, you know, we're singing from the same song sheet, we want to help people, but actual markers in place to help people steer through times like we're seeing now, indeed unprecedented times in New South Wales.
And in fact, what we're saying, what we're hearing from farmers too, is that they want to see things like a drought policy. They want to see more action on the white paper as well. They also want to see some sort of agriculture policy. These were all issues that have been raised in regards to Barnaby Joyce and his tenure as Agriculture Minister as well, and many people feeling that not enough of those policies were signed off on or actually presented or actually put into action.
Well, just this week we saw the government commodity forecaster ABARES present its latest outlook, and you know the figures are down, well down, $59 billion worth of produce to come from Australia this year. When you think about that in the context of the government-backed industry target of $100 billion in a little over a decade's time. Now, obviously, a lot of that does have to do with drought, but that forecast this week actually pointed to an item which Mr. Joyce raised himself in that white paper you mentioned when he was the agriculture minister, and that's clear stocks reporting for the grains industry. This is something that we haven't seen. You'll be familiar with Grain Producers Australia and grain growers' calls to have the handlers sort of declare their hand, I suppose, and let the industry know what stocks we have here in Australia. And I thought it was really interesting that ABARES this week actually pointed to that and said, you know, this could be a really helpful tool, particularly helping businesses like Manildra in New South Wales, which we've seen over the past 12 months import grain, something that, and we're meant to be one of those nations feeding the world, exporting grain to the world, and yet we've had to import it over the past 12 months, or the department has approved the import over it over the past 12 months. So Mr. Joyce, I know he's a backbencher now, a former Deputy Prime Minister, but certainly his legacy in this area continues to pique interest, I think you'd say.
That's Kath Sullivan speaking there to Michael Condon. Well, Labor has been calling for more information on this, and Warwick Long spoke to Shadow Agriculture Minister Joel Fitzgibbon.
Well, for a whole range of reasons, we understand that Joyce was allocated two additional staff, extra resources, and, of course, additional travel entitlements to undertake this task he's been given. But it appears he did no real work. And I think that's evidenced by the fact that he's delivered no report to the Prime Minister. The other second point is that since the government tore up COAG's drought reform program in 2013, at that stage Tony Abbott and Barnaby Joyce were in charge, the government's been finding excuses to kick drought initiatives down the road. You know, we had the drought coordinator, drought envoy, the drought task force, the drought summit. And of course, every time the government makes these appointments or holds these forums, it's an excuse to do nothing until after those reports are complete. And here we are 6 years on and well and truly into a very severe drought. And we've had plenty of talk, but no real action.
You think they're using these roles and these reports as a way of kicking the issue down the road?
Of course they are. And it was worse than that in the case of envoys, Abbott and Joyce, because it's well known in Parliament that those appointments were really made to keep Abbott and Joyce quiet. Morrison was heading into an election. Both Abbott and Joyce were agitating to come back to the front bench. So he gave them these fictitious roles to play. And, of course, that came at great expense to the taxpayer, but it's also an insult to rural communities suffering from drought, the fact that their problem was being used as a political pawn to silence Barnaby Joyce.
To be fair, though, he may not have written a reporter's drought envoy, but Barnaby Joyce was very visible in that role and travelled to a lot of communities or a lot of media events, forums, that kind of thing.
And that's the point, Warwick. He campaigned, really, around the country, expressing concern for farmers and rural communities so that the pressure would be taken off Scott Morrison on that same issue. So, in other words, they looked to be caring, and that was their response. But if nothing came of his visits, then really there's been no assistance for farmers or those communities.
Barnaby Joyce has said in a statement to the ABC he reported directly to the Prime Minister on numerous occasions, put forward particular concerns of farmers, and then interacted with government departments and charities as well. Is that not good enough?
Well, we asked these questions in the Senate this week, Warwick, and the only formal response we've had is from Minister Littleproud, who clearly said that he can't deliver us a report from Barnaby Joyce because he never ever submitted one. Now, if taxpayers are paying potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars for additional staff and resources to Barnaby Joyce, I think they'd expect a bit more than him backgrounding the ABC trying to argue that, he briefed Scott Morrison, I suspect, over a beer.
That is Shadow Agriculture Minister Labor's Joel Fitzgibbon speaking to Warwick Long. And there's certainly not a lot of love for Barnaby on the text line. At 8 minutes to one, to some other news now, and another bulk grain handler in Port Pirie could only mean good things for Mid-North farmers, according to Nelshaby Ag Bureau President Darren Button. Food company Archer Daniel Matthews has announced they will be exporting grain from Port Pirie by ship in time for this year's harvest. Mr. Button says he's excited to see more options for farmers in the Mid-North.
I was very pleased. Very good to have another receival point, and also good to have the competition. And it's good to see the port potentially be used somewhere near its capacity.
Do you think it'll have much of a practical implication on the sort of services you get either from ADM or Viterra?
It'll have to help. When AWB set up the site at Crystal Brook, that really put a cat amongst the pigeons as far as how bulk handling was approached in our area, and certainly improved the services that we received. So this can only help. It's only 23 kilometres to Crystal Brook, so effectively they have had some pretty strong competition since 2001. I wouldn't be the only person that's actually driven out of one site when we couldn't get the grade that we wanted to move to another one. There's been effective competition for quite some time, and this will only add to it. It's a good thing.
Do you think there'd be much interest in sending it by boat or by rail, or is it tomato to most growers?
It's all about the dollars and the service. I think I don't care whether they put it on a plane and fly it out. It's just dollars and cents and service.
Is there any particular sort of segregations you think would be really useful around Pirie?
I don't really think it'll make a lot of difference. I would assume that they would just be going for the bread and butter segregations of feed barley and milling wheat.
Speaking of grain, what has the season been like on your property?
Oh, variable. Thought we might do a ride up till about 5 or 6 weeks ago, but just lack of rain in the last bit over a month. But there's other areas that are a lot worse, so I'm not really complaining. But, it just could have been a lot better.
I was I saw some hay being had been baled up on a property when I was driving over here. Is that have a lot of the members of the Ag Bureau started cutting hay at the moment?
Yeah, it's been pretty full on. There's been a bit of a swing towards hay that almost unprocurable last year. We buy all our hay in and got to March and we just couldn't find any. We brought some in from Lock on Eyre Peninsula and some in from Victoria. So people aren't wanting to get caught with that sort of situation. If they want to run livestock, you've got to have hay. So yeah, there's been a bit of a swing towards hay. I'm really happy that ADM are going to be involved in Piri. I guess the only negative to the site is that they're the only people that are able to purchase through their site, so that once you've delivered it there, you're locked into to selling it to them. And I guess they'll have to have some pretty good prices up, otherwise people won't want to take that chance that they're going to miss out on competition from other buyers. But I guess ADM will work that out, and I'd like to think they'll get a few tonnes in there.
Apparently, while a lot of, I'm sure growers around here might have done business with ADM over the years, this is actually their first handling site here in Australia. What was your reaction when you found that out?
Yeah, I was quite surprised about that, and we're quite privileged, and I haven't got a great knowledge of ADM's what their workings are. So it was really quite interesting to find out that this is the first site, and hope it all goes well.
That's Nelshaby Ag Bureau President and Farmer Darren Button speaking there to Lucas Forbes. Well, the last of South Australia's volunteer firefighters have returned home from Queensland. South Australia sent the largest interstate contingent of about 150 staff to help fight the Queensland fires. Aldinga Beach CFS Brigade Lieutenant Emma Ewens was a crew leader. She says it was exhausting but worth it for the gratitude from the local communities.
The area we were in, it wasn't too busy where fire activity was concerned. However, where we were working was devastated by the fire. A lot of the community members were there and we interacted with them. So from that point of view, it was pretty interactive there. Obviously, there's a few bits that we had to go and put out, bits of fire that was burning and little flare-ups that we attended to. But a lot of the time we were doing some patrolling to make sure that nothing reignited and spread and took off and caused any more devastation in the area.
What were the conditions like?
They were pretty good while we were there, considering what they had been. I know the media, the weather forecast was looking a little bit non-favourable coming into the weekend. We were grateful and thankful, as were the rest of the community, I think, that it didn't, it wasn't as bad as what they were expecting it to be. So we got lucky.
South Australia sent up the largest interstate contingent of volunteers. Is it quite useful to go and fight fires interstate to boost your skills when you come back to South Australia?
Absolutely. It's not only the different terrain that we deal with, but it's people from different agencies. So we work with the Rural Fire Service while we were over there, who's firefighting is different to ours. We're used to having bushfires and grass fires, and how we manage them is a bit different to how they do over there, given the different terrain. But not only that, but we also work with different agencies, including the Metropolitan Fire Service, who came over in part of it as part of our contingent as well. We had SAS members that came over with us, but working with the different agencies throughout the whole thing, you learn so much from these people just by talking to them, by seeing how they work, playing with different equipment. The basis of firefighting is the same. You put the wet stuff on the hot stuff. However, every fire is going to be different depending on where you are, what sort of terrain is burning, the skill sets of your crew. I was so lucky to have different members who have come from different brigades across the state, and you know they had skill sets that I learnt from. I'm hoping that they've learnt something from myself as well. But having all these different unique experiences coming together, especially in a disaster like this, we're able to do our best work by bouncing off of each other and drawing on other people's expertise that we can take back to our own brigades, and we can use that and that experience to help South Australia as well, and our own homes and our own towns, hopefully.
When you go interstate, how are you received by the locals?
They are beyond grateful. We always had donations from the local community of food there for us because they wanted to. They wanted to give back, you know, and I can't tell you how appreciative we are of that as well. It's small things that you, it does mean so much to us.
That is Aldinga Beach CFS Brigade Lieutenant Emma Ewan speaking there to Cassie Huff. Just a few more texts. Well, on Barnaby Joyce, someone here saying that Barnaby Joyce is just a part of the dysfunctional government we have, and they go so far as to say that we have destroying Australia. And Rob from Cal has texted to say at Cal we've had huge federal support on drought, with Bridget McKenzie giving $1 million to our council and 15 other South Australian councils. I am going to have to leave it there, but thanks for your text, Rob. That is all the time we have left for the Country Hour. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Look after each other. And I'll be back with you on Monday. But right now, though, we're heading up to news time, 1 o'clock.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.